Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for the Friday, November 28th reading of East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. The first article today is from the Scottsdale Progress. It's titled, Scottsdale's Season of Giving Begins, by Tom Scanlon. It's time. For many around Scottsdale, Thanksgiving week doesn't just wave the starting flag for the holiday season. This is also the week where many take time out from hectic schedules and day-to-day concerns to dive into a deeper concept, help others. That's the regular mission of the Scottsdale Food Bank, which helps families struggling to get by. Relying on donations of food, the food bank recently acquired a new box truck to support grocery store food rescue efforts. But the truck does not have refrigeration, limiting its usefulness in transporting fresh produce from multiple grocery stores. Enter Councilwoman Jan Duboskis, who rallied support to retrofit the truck with refrigeration. She found willing helpers in Blue Zones, which donated $9,402. Honor Health, which contributed $6,750, and the Scottsdale Firefighters Association, which came through with $13,500. Expanding refrigerated transport allows us to rescue more fresh, healthy food that would otherwise go to waste, said Sue O., Scottsdale Human Services Manager. Thanks to the incredible generosity of our community partners, we can safely deliver these items to families and seniors who need them most. The councilwoman's conclusion, we live in an incredibly generous community. The Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Scottsdale will second that. The club got a head start on the giving season on November 18th with the annual Visions of Sugar Plums holiday benefit. Last year's event's proceeds helped purchase two club buses, essential for transporting students from school to the club. The group serves thousands of youth and teens across 9 locations, including Scottsdale, North Phoenix, Fountain Hills, the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, and the Hualapai Nation. Next summer, BGCS will open its 10th club. And Steve and Maria Sanghai Branch at South Scottsdale's Tonalea Middle School's campus. The day after the club's event, Granite Reef Senior Center also had an early Giving Day celebration with the annual Senior Thanksgiving Luncheon. The City of Scottsdale's Human Services team also sponsors two big giving programs this time of year. To make Adopt-A-Family monetary donations, become a sponsor, view the wish list for area teens, or get more information, visit scottsdaleaz.gov. Food donations can be made at the Vista del Camino Center, 7700 East Roosevelt Street. Scottsdale's Adopt-A-Senior program pairs community members with local seniors in need. The program is accepting applications for donors and sponsors. Sponsors provide a $50 Fry's grocery gift card for seniors to purchase Thanksgiving food. Sponsors will also receive a list of 5 items from a senior's wish list. The average holiday sponsor spends between $150 to $200 on all items. Gift card donations can be dropped off or mailed to the Granite Reef Senior Center, 1700 North Granite Reef Road. Meanwhile, with more families and seniors falling on hard times, Scottsdale Human Services is working to expand food distribution capacity. The Scottsdale Food Bank, operated by the City of Scottsdale Human Services Department, recently increased its service capacity by 20 households and now supports up to 120 households per week. Fresh food donations from local grocers continue to supplement the inventory, and St. Mary's Food Bank provides 120 emergency food boxes weekly. Food distribution is expanding through satellite locations at the Paiute Neighborhood Center, Granite Reef Senior Center, Vista del Camino, and Via Linda Senior Center. The Brown Bag Program currently serves 120 seniors and has capacity to grow to 200 participants. Every donation helps ensure Scottsdale families and seniors have access to fresh, healthy food, Duboskis said. And that article is titled, Scottsdale's Season of Giving Begins. Closure Plans Rile Pima Echo Canyon Elementary Families by Tom Scanlon. With Thanksgiving approaching, students at Pima and Echo Canyon Elementary Schools are learning the importance of being thankful and one of the most important holidays in American history. The oldest can comprehend a cruel irony. These students may become part of Scottsdale's history. With the expected historical closing/repurposing of these two A-rated schools looming, parents are not thankful about the district's plans. One impacted mother begged the district to slow things down, worrying the dominoes are falling. Another called the plans a betrayal of trust. While dozens have made public comments at recent meetings and scores have emailed the district, the decision on closures will come down to 5 board members, 3 serving their first terms. That decision looms at a crucial December meeting. Scottsdale Unified School District held a November 13th public hearing to obtain public comment regarding the potential closure and repurposing of Echo Canyon K-8 School and Pima Elementary School. Opening up microphones to all who wanted to express opinions, district administrators and the governing board got all they wanted to hear, and likely more. We're here for a topic of conversation none of us wanted to have, Scottsdale Unified School District Superintendent Scott Menzel said, kicking off the emotional meeting. Discussions related to closing or repurposing schools are never easy, and are almost always of the last resort, he added. Menzel said his recommendation regarding the two schools was driven by demographics and budget realities that require difficult decisions. He also referred to a previous repurposing of Tonalea Elementary School, which closed in 2014. Menzel said Echo Canyon and Pima were targeted because both had enrollment under 300, SUSD's smallest schools. And he added, in the spring he advised the governing board decisions on closing/repurposing for the 2026-27 school year should be made by January. No decision will be made before December 9th, Menzel said. Last week's public hearing sets the table for that decision time meeting, when the board may formally decide on the fate of Pima and Echo Canyon. At the November 13th meeting, comments from parents ranged from tearful to rageful. Rebecca Bernhardt, an Echo Canyon mom, kicked off the public comments by saying, instead of saving $2 million by closing two schools, the district should look at ending the Mandarin program, which she insisted would save twice that much. She was followed by a third-generation Pima alum, Debbie Schumacher, who said the Pima community was blindsided by the news of closing a new $18.1 million school that's rated A+. Jake Davis called out the 3 new board members for reneging on campaigning promises and SUSD superintendent since 2019. Scott Menzel has put us in an impossible position, Davis said. His inability to problem solve is embarrassing. You are the reason families are leaving Scottsdale schools, Davis told the superintendent. Others tried to remove emotion and use logic. Acknowledging SUSD's budget problems, Kristen Gurin wondered why closing, repurposing two schools was the only option. This process continues to feel extremely rushed. Agreeing with that, Holly Martins added, there must be a better way. Gina Aiden's plea, slow this crazy train down. Emily Bonahue, fighting back tears, said her children will get lost if forced to move to other schools. Representative Matt Gress, who represents a district that includes part of Scottsdale, acknowledged a state trend in fewer students and districts are being asked to make tough decisions. But he stressed closures should never be presented as only options. It appears the district is just managing decline, he added. Along that line, Doug Anderson demanded of district leaders, what are you going to do proactively? With declining enrollment, he said, what are you going to do? Continue to close schools? While the majority of speakers were parents, a few young Pima students took to the microphone. Pima did nothing to you, so you should do nothing to Pima, one girl told the board. Pima has great teachers and great academics. Another begged the board not to close the school, as all the teachers and staff are so nice. Save Pima. After an hour of comments, board members thanked the participants. After board president Donna Lewis stressed no action would be taken that night. The SUSD board meetings over the past 2 months have grown increasingly ominous for Pima and Echo Canyon families. On October 28th, SUSD Governing Board study session provided the context of the potential shuttering of the two schools. In a word, money. Administrators of Scottsdale Public Schools District project an $18 million deficit, according to a presentation by Shannon Crossier, the district's chief financial officer. In 15 years, Crossier underscored, SUSD's enrollment fell by nearly a quarter, from 25,754 students in 2010 to 19,722 this year. While this results in decreasing state funding, SUSD costs continue to accelerate, driven by teacher staff salary increases and the ever-rising cost of health care. Given the decline of 6,000 students in the past 15 years, the question is not if schools need to be repurposed, but rather which ones, Crossier stated on October 18th. Money spent on keeping under-enrolled buildings open is money that cannot be spent on investing in our staff in the form of pay raises and addressing the rising cost of health insurance. With money coming in falling and money going out rising, Crossier said the 2026-27 total budget gap is $7.8 to $9 million. While the district is looking at various areas for saving, Crossier underscored the average savings per school building closed $1 million. Earlier in October, board members Amy Carney and Corrine Warner voted against moving forward on the repurposing process of Pima and Echo Canyon, but were outvoted by Mike Sharkey, Lewis, and Matt Patinsky. At the November 18th meeting, there was nothing done to encourage those hoping for a way to keep the two schools open. According to a demographics and enrollment analysis presented by outside firm Applied Economics, since 2010-11, SUSD enrollment has declined by 6,200 students, 24%, exacerbated by a loss of about 800 students, or 3.6%, in the 2020-21 year, due to impacts of COVID, representing an average loss of about 1.8% per year. That part was nothing new, as Crossier and Menzel have been saying the same. But the presentation confirmed suspicions of many. Enrollment in charter schools within or very near SUSD boundaries increased by 5,700 K-12 students during the same period. SUSD is hardly alone, as Scottsdale's unified, steady enrollment decline over the past 14 years is consistent with most districts in established areas, all of which have also been impacted by demographic changes and increasing education choices. And the outlook presented by Applied Economics is just as gloomy. SUSD's enrollment projections over the next 5 years show declines similar to those over the past 5 years, with reductions at 22 of the district's 25 facilities. According to the presentation, Echo Canyon currently has an enrollment of 257, falling by nearly half from the 472 enrolled 6 years ago. If Echo Canyon remains open, enrollment is projected to fall to 235 students in 5 years. 6 years ago, 528 students took classes at Pima Elementary. Current Pima enrollment has fallen to 295. If it stays open, Pima's projected enrollment in 5 years is 240. Menzel gave a presentation at the November 18th meeting on repurposing solutions. Jason Rose of a local public relations agency also pitched a proposal to repurpose Echo Canyon Elementary into the Scottsdale Arts Academy, an arts-focused magnet school. Board members asked a variety of questions, but as previously noted, did not vote on any of these options. Matt Patinsky suggested a district-wide audit and forensic accounting to see where money could be saved. Corrine Werner agreed with that, then blasted Menzel's presentation as skewed. It's what you want us to approve, Superintendent. We're put in a position where everyone's backs are against the wall. And that article was titled, Closure Plans Rile Pima Echo Canyon Elementary Families. Scottsdale Reaches Deal with Axon on Apartments by Tom Scanlon. Four-way chess mixed with big money poker, anyone? After complex high-stakes strategizing and last-minute negotiations, one thing is clear after Scottsdale City Council's November 17th meeting. Axon stays. A deal has been reached that apparently, though there is some dispute over this, satisfies multiple parties. Axon, city leaders, state lawmakers, and the group suing the city and state on the Axon issue. Thus, after years of threats to leave Scottsdale due to challenges of its expansion plans, Axon will remain in North Scottsdale. At an inconspicuous office there, the maker of taser stun guns and police body cameras has flourished, now approaching $3 billion in worldwide sales. Axon agrees to reduce its worldwide campus expansion plans from 1,882 apartments to 600 apartments and 600 condos. The site remains 74 acres of undeveloped former state land bordered by the Loop 101, Hayden Road, and Axon Way, formerly known as Mayo Boulevard. After intense public debate and private wheeling and dealings, a 4-3 vote reduces the scope of Axon's project by more than a third. The vote happened after Josh Eisner, Axon's president, called out misinformation from Mayor Lisa Borowski regarding negotiations. Eisner displayed a text saying, "Can you guys agree to 500 now and 200 in the next 60 months?" Which Eisner stressed, "I can prove to you is from Tays." Shortly after Eisner's comments, the mayor called a recess. Returning to public after an extensive delay, Borowski apologized to a pact, mostly with Axon employees, council members. "We've been busy in very serious discussions about how we can resolve this," the first-term mayor said. With a negotiated deal on the table, Borowski was the crucial swing vote. Councilman Adam Quansman, a key player in the negotiations, and fellow representatives Solange Whitehead and Marianne McAllen expressed strong support for the deal. Outspoken against the deal were Representatives Barry Graham, Jan Duboskis, and Kathy Littlefield. The latter is the wife of former Councilman Bob Littlefield, leader of a group trying to block Axon's original plan. Kathy Littlefield and Graham, who questioned the new plan's details before declaring the agreement weakens requirements, such as waiving water requirements, voted against Axon's original plan last year. Whitehead voted for the rezoning allowing of up to 1,882 apartments at the end of 2024. Hours before last week's meeting, Borowski said she would vote against a Quansman-brokered plan for 750 apartments and 750 condos. But new numbers were apparently proposed during the private meeting, and Borowski changed her tune. "Going from nearly 1,900 apartments down to 600, I think, is a positive result, especially with all the other moving parts," Borowski said before her tide-shifting vote. She noted a pending referendum was nullified by a newly crafted law allowing Axon to move forward. Even with the election, no matter the outcome, under the state law, Axon can do the 1,900 units or more. The negotiated deal, Borowski implied, the group Taxpayers Against Awful Apartment Exemptions agreed to drop the lawsuit challenging the state law, creates finality on this issue, Borowski declared. It gets the conversation moving in a direction of, let's break ground and start construction and let's go build a great project. Bob Littlefield, however, told the Progress he did not support the deal. "It's still too many apartments," he insisted. "My bottom line is no apartments without voter approval," Littlefield said the morning after the council vote. "Tays isn't agreeing to anything. Our lawsuit is still alive." Bob Littlefield said Axon is afraid of what voters would decide. If this gets the vote, he predicted, it's going to go down. According to a city release hours after the vote, The Memorandum of Understanding reduces previously approved residential density from 1,882 units to 1,200, split evenly between 600 apartments and 600 condominiums. Axon must also construct supporting infrastructure, including road improvements, water and sewer upgrades, a public dog park, and a one-mile pedestrian and bicycle trail encircling the campus, according to Holly Peralta, a city spokeswoman. Axon will also give Scottsdale 5 years of no-cost access to a real-time crime center, offering advanced video, mapping, and analytics technology to support public safety operations. By the same 4-3 votes, Council approved several related ordinances, including a new permitting option that allows qualified architects and engineers to certify building plans and inspections for large international headquarters campuses. Though bypassing the typical Planning Commission Development Review Board process, the ordinance maintains city oversight through audit and enforcement authority, according to the release. Council also voted to repeal the zoning ordinance of a very different council approved last year, which Taze is challenging. The matter of an international campus with a North Scottsdale office designed to look like a spaceship to underscore the futuristic vision surrounded by apartment buildings and a hotel is complex, to say the least. Clearance for Axon's plan of some 1,900 apartments by the 2024 Scottsdale City Council hardly proved lasting. The 5 aye votes were still echoing when Bob Littlefield and Taze launched a successful signature drive that forced the issue to the ballot, to be decided not by elected leaders, but Scottsdale's general voters. After months of compromise meetings with newly elected city leaders failed, Axon found more willing ears at the state level, crafting and winning passage of a law that allowed its job-rich plans and rendering the pending referendum moot. Bob Littlefield and his taxpayers against awful apartment zoning exceptions took one look at the law and said, "Sue that." Challenging the Arizona constitutionality of the Axon law, the lawsuit thus became the board for the 4-way chess game involving Axon, Taze, Council, and the state. State leaders have been quiet observers. In the days leading up to the November 17th City Council meeting, intense meetings took place with Eisner and other Axon representatives, Kwansman, Borowski, and representatives of Taze. "I wasn't part of any negotiations," Bob Littlefield insisted. As Borowski put it, she met with the anonymous funders of taxpayers against awful apartment zoning exemptions to agree to a further reduction of apartments totaling 500 units with an agreement not to seek a referendum on the deal. Luis Santatella, the interim city attorney, who was called on several times during the November 17th meeting, responded to several requests for clarification from the Progress. His responses: "Taze is not a party to the Axon City Memorandum of Understanding. The repeal of the 2024 Axon Land Rezoning Ordinance effectively nullifies the referendum. Since the underlying ordinance is no longer in effect, there is no longer a measure to refer to the voters. There is no handshake agreement between the city and Taze regarding the lawsuit. Taze is not affiliated with the city and continues to pursue litigation against both the state and the city, challenging the constitutionality of SB 1543. The agenda packet included dozens of emails. Susan McGarry, a leader of Axon's neighbor Stone Brooks HOA, complained via email the last-minute meeting did not allow time for us to organize a gathering at the council meeting. Betsy Marks predicted the revised plan would be suicide for all of you and us. Please restrain from allowing this to pass and find a way to have Scottsdale voters let you know what they really want. Pat Schaller asked council to support the citizens of Scottsdale and join the lawsuit against the Axon bill. Bob Littlefield repeated many of his earlier points to city council, adding, "It appears a few of you may be on the take from Axon." Ryan Sherman's blunt email prayer: "Please don't deny us our God-given rights as Scottsdale citizens. Let's remember the referendum. Not just jam Axon through," Dennis Peralo wrote to the city council. Others warned of water, traffic, congestion, and safety concerns if City Council approved the Exxon deal. Take note, resident and business owner Baron Benham warned, the voters are not in a good mood over this. At the meeting, Eisner was not the only one pushing for the deal. Several citizens spoke in favor of the modified Exxon plan, which is expected to bring thousands of jobs here. And that article was titled, Scottsdale Reaches Deal with Exxon on Apartments. Now for some Paradise Valley news from the town of Paradise Valley Independent. Volunteer judges bring wide range of expertise to Paradise Valley Court, by Allison Coatsbauer. For more than five decades, Stanley Marks has called Paradise Valley home. At 86, he may be the oldest judge in Arizona, but he's also one of the town's most dedicated volunteers. The longtime attorney says he first agreed to serve on the municipal bench to give back to the town, and 5 years later, he still sees the work as a privilege. Marks is one of several attorneys who gave their time to run Paradise Valley's all-volunteer municipal court, an uncommon system in Arizona where most jurisdictions require paid and full-time judges. Together, these volunteers handle everything from traffic cases to misdemeanor hearings, all for the love of giving back to the community. For Marks, the work is more than enforcing laws. It's about standing for what's fair and creating human connections. I realize that as a judge, I was able to provide some semblance of justice and fairness, and it remains a pleasure to serve and receive a thank you for listening and ruling with compassion, he said. The work is something different and intellectually rewarding for the attorneys who've never had a chance to be on the other side of the bench before, Marks said. It's interesting, challenging, and rewarding to be a lawyer and be on the other side of the podium in the courthouse and having a little different view, he said. Rather than being an advocate, you're being a decider of facts. Serving on the bench provides volunteer judges with a sense of value and belonging, knowing they've helped uphold justice in their community. And that's all the time we have left for that article, which is titled, Volunteer Judges Bring Wide Range of Expertise to Paradise Valley Court. You've been listening to the East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. All your favorite programming can be found anytime, on demand, at sunsounds.org. I'm your volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. I hope you have a great rest of your day.